The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. I've been saying the Trumpet Daily quite often the last week, but there you go. It's ingrained into my thinking. I'm so used to it over these past several years. The live stream, you can get to the Trumpet Daily at our trumpet.com website, trumpet.com/live. And you can also send us some feedback. Our email address is td@kpcg.fm. Well, we have so much to get to. I haven't been able to keep into the news as much over the weekend because of our camp out, but the guys have been busy, our news gatherers, as there's a lot to cover. They kick off the trial in Minneapolis over the George Floyd case, Derek Chauvin and the other police officers, I believe it's the other ones too. In any event, there's potential for that to explode into more violence depending upon the outcome of that trial, as we'll see in the weeks ahead. Over the weekend, you also had this monstrosity of a bill, $2 trillion, or $1.9 trillion, just forced right on through by Democrats only. And of course, very little of it actually going toward COVID relief. They put that in the title, of course, to make it seem like it's it's just for you, the people. It's just to provide help. When in fact, as we know from 2 Kings 14, there is no help. We'll go through some of the details of that so-called economic relief package over the weekend as well. You had executive action from the illegitimate president, Joe Biden. And this goes right hand in hand with the H.R. 1. They're trying to legalize the cheating. And you can read through Joe Biden's executive order and see how that they're basically now saying that to have a free and fair election is to be racist. And so we've got to do everything that we can to make sure we legalize everything that we did in the past election, to make sure that we can harvest all these ballots, to make sure there's no ID needed at all, to make sure that it's not the election day, it's an election month. We've got to have all of that. Anything other than that, then you're a racist. That's the sort of deranged thinking that there is today. And then, of course, the big headlines regarding the royal family in Britain. You heard some of it there at the top of the hour. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry on TV with Oprah. It finally aired last night. 2 hours of it. And these two young people just unloading on the royal family. It couldn't get any worse for the royal family. And you got to go back to what we've been writing, particularly since 2017. And I think about my dad's most recent article, America has no helper, neither does Britain. There's no help for these nations. To understand this turmoil, he says in this piece, you have to understand the truth about the prophecy in 2 Kings 14. There's no help for Israel. And Israel, as my father brings out in this article, Israel refers prophetically to the United States and Britain, and there's no help for these two nations in particular. Look at some of the headlines in the UK. I mean, it says enough just to read the headlines. Harry and Meghan's Oprah interview bombshells. They accuse the royal family of racism, reveal Duchess had suicidal thoughts, and say that Kate made Meghan cry. Two little children, spoiled children. And of course, hurling the racism charge. Surprise, surprise. Another headline says, forget hiding behind the sofa. The royal family needed a bulletproof vest as Harry and Meghan let rip. The Telegraph wrote that it's fair to say that this two-hour tell-all represented a worst-case scenario for what the couple kept referring to as the firm. The firm, the institution. It was a, you know, it reminds me of what some of those bad actors said about life in the Worldwide Church of God, life under Herbert Armstrong, when we were going through the lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages. And you had these top-ranked ministers coming forward in their deposition saying how miserable it was to be in that church. That church where there was just so much growth and there were so many positive changes in people's lives. And the message that was going out as we were getting our minds off of ourselves and on serving God in the work and supporting Herbert Armstrong as God's servant. And all of the youth programs and the blessings, the blessings for family. You think back at your time, if you had any association with that church, and how wonderful it was, and how many blessings it brought into families and their children. And then these ministers come along. Now, the roots in the royal family, they don't run quite as deep with Meghan in particular. Harry, of course, was born into this. In any event, here were these top ministers saying, oh, it was just, they came along and they revised the history and they said, oh, it was just terrible. It was just miserable. Well, then fine. Why didn't you move on? Well, that's what Meghan and Harry have done. And then here they go on TV and they talk about how horrible it was to be a prince. How horrible it was to serve the people. How horrible it was. They didn't have any help, she says. This article, I think this might have been from The Telegraph as well. But basically it does a pretty good job of debunking some of the things that Meghan leveled at the royal family last night. Here she is with the most ridiculous of the charges in this interview with Oprah, clip one.
You certainly must have had some conversations with Harry about it and have your own suspicions as to why they didn't want to make Archie a prince. What are those thoughts? Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because of his race? And I know that's a loaded question, but...
But I can give you an honest answer. In those months when I was pregnant, all around this same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
Concerns about how dark his skin would be. And of course, there's Oprah right on cue. What a performance. And the Telegraph goes through some of the history that, of course, is not covered in this tell-all interview. How that it goes back to King George V. Why Archie was not entitled to become a prince. You just have to go, you have to dig a little bit into the history of the royal family and decisions made by previous monarchs. And as for security, there's other, as the Telegraph brings out, there's others in the royal family that are not, they're no longer paid for by taxpayers. Their security detail, that is. You know, it's interesting, in the midst of this conversation, Oprah even at one point said, your truth. That's very popular with progressives. You know, you've got your story. You've got your truth. As if to say, you know, of course, there's going to be people that disagree with this. But they were not given a voice last night. Prince Harry, of course, has gone right along with this charge of racism colonialism, and we've been writing about this at thetrumpet.com. Harry said one of the most telling and saddest parts of this whole saga is the fact that no royal family members called out the quote, colonial undertones of Meghan's coverage in the media. So the media, they're against us. The royal family, they're against us. We've been attacked, and a lot of it's motivated by racism. And it's all just a bunch, as they would say in the UK, it's a bunch of rubbish. We wrote just last year, March 2020, about Meghan pushing this racism narrative, how that they're right on board with the Black Lives Matter movement. She's had meetings with Gavin Newsom, the governor of New York, the radical leftist governor. They've got a close relationship with the Obamas. These are two young left-wingers, left-wing revolutionaries. And here they are doing everything that they can to hurt, to hurt the royal family of Britain. And the spirit behind it, as you know, you can't really understand it unless you understand 2 Kings 14. That effort to blot out even the name of Israel. Even the name. Here she is again last night, Meghan Markle, clip 2.
Look, I was really ashamed to say it at the time, and ashamed to have to admit it to Harry, especially, because I know how much loss he suffered.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that if I didn't say it, that I would do it, and I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And that was a very clear and real and frightening constant thought.
And so she wanted to commit suicide. It was so miserable being in the royal family of Britain. And of course, who's to blame? As she explains, well, I tried to get help from the royal family, but they wouldn't provide any. So they're to blame. They almost killed her. It's like AOC. She was very nearly killed by the insurrection of January the 6th. I mean, these are Emmy award-winning performances. Andrew Cuomo, he would know all about that. So much. It's just a show. It's just for the cameras. In truth, the royal family was more generous than it should have been when they had their separation last year. And you look at where these two are living in Beverly Hills or wherever it is in Southern California. They're doing pretty good, and I'm pretty sure they can afford some security detail of their own. This is a little bit more from last night on Oprah, clip 3.
There are so many people who are afraid to voice that they need help. And I know personally how hard it is to not just voice it, but when you voice it, to be told no.
Oof.
And so I went to Human Resources. And I said, I need help, because in my old job, there was a union and they would protect me. And I remember this conversation like it was yesterday, because they said, my heart goes out to you because I see how bad it is, but there's nothing we can do to protect you because you're not a paid employee of the institution.
Says Oprah, you're not a paid employee of the institution. She says, her old job, she was an actress. She was together with a lot of left-wing actors, and they had a union, don't you know? A union that would have saved her life. But this institution, this royal family institution, well, there was no union to save me. There was no union looking out for me. I mean, this is a joke. And it's sad and tragic to see what has happened to that family, to see what has happened to the old throne of David. But it's not something that is surprising. Not if you've been reading thetrumpet.com, not if you've been reading our magazine, not if you've read the New Throne of David book. Here's a little bit more from that exchange, clip four.
It takes so much courage to admit that you need help.
Mm-hmm.
It takes so much courage to voice that. As I said, I was ashamed. I'm supposed to be stronger than that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put more on my husband's shoulders. He's carrying the weight of the world. I don't want to bring that to him. I bring solutions.
Mm-hmm.
To admit that you need help, to admit how dark of a place you're in.
How do you feel about the palace hearing you speak your truth today? Are you afraid of a backlash?
Your truth, as she says there. Are you afraid of a backlash? And of course, these are two young people that haven't been concerned about or afraid of a backlash at all. They're on the offensive. They're taking to the airwaves. They're not just walking away quietly to their millionaire lifestyle in Southern California. They're walking away saying, it was horrible. We suffered. We're still suffering. I almost died. It was their fault. Harry, when he came along for the interview, listened to what he had to say about the influence that Meghan has had on the course of his life. Clip five.
Do you think you would have left or ever stepped back were it not for Meghan?
No, the answer to your question is no. I wouldn't have been able to, because I myself was trapped as well.
So there he is, candidly admitting that he would not have left the royal family were it not for Meghan Markle. Because he was trapped, as he says there. He couldn't get out. It was like those worldwide ministers describing their time in the church under Mr. Armstrong. They talked about it as if they were trapped, that they couldn't get out of it. There's the prince. Prince Harry, he said, his father, Charles, Prince Charles, stopped taking his calls. My father in a coworker letter, this is from November, just a few months ago, and he's commenting here on a Telegraph piece about the split, about the separation in the royal family. He says, the Telegraph reported that after Prince Harry's first blind date with Meghan Markle, he was in a trance. He was in a trance, and that on the second date, he decided he was going to marry her. Angela Levin, who authored a biography titled Harry, wrote, quote, the sad truth seems to be that however much Harry and Meghan stare blissfully into each other's eyes, and however tightly Meghan hangs onto her husband's arm, they seem to bring out the worst in each other. I witnessed this warm young prince, listen to this, I witnessed this warm young prince morph into a nervy, tense man who seems constantly on edge. And then there he is on Oprah last night saying that, yeah, I wouldn't have left were it not for her. Look at the destruction that this woman has brought into the royal family. I mean, let's just call it as it is. He admitted it. And this author here says, wow, what a transformation I witnessed just in writing about these two. My father says she wrote that Meghan may be someone who will always zoom in on the negative unless everything and everyone around her is going her way, and said that this woman has changed Harry for the worse. You see, unless everyone worships her, then you might be a racist. You might be a racist. Unless they worship her. Well, you nearly killed me. I nearly died. I nearly committed suicide because of you. 2 hours of that. And then the prince quietly admitting, yeah, well, you're right. I wouldn't have left were it not for her. Here's one more exchange involving Prince Harry, clip six.
Please explain how you, Prince Harry, raised in a palace, in a life of privilege, literally a prince, how you were trapped.
Trapped within the system. like the rest of my family are. My father and my brother, they are trapped. They don't get to leave. And I have huge compassion for that.
He's a mind reader now, too. He knows that his brother is his father. They're trapped. They're trapped in the system. Oh, we're familiar with that term as well. The system is rigged against us. And I was trapped. And thankfully, she was able to save me. And I wish we could do the same for my father and my brother. I wish we could rescue them from the British royal family. What an uplifting message. Well, I speak as a fool, of course. It's all negative. If they're not being worshipped, then it's all negative. My father asked in September 2017, what is wrong with Britain and the royal family? That's something my father asked 3.5 years ago. What is wrong? What is happening? Well, as we explain in that article, again, go back to September of 2017. It was the featured piece. And there we talked about how that we've seen this royal family drift so far from biblical morality. Look at what so many in the royal family, the causes that they fight for, the movements that they're behind, the people now that they associate with. You know what's also interesting about this development and what Prince Harry admitted on television, on national TV last night? Yeah, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have left. She's the one that broke up the royal family. What's interesting about this is what President Trump had to say. I didn't get the exact date on this. I think it's from a year or two ago, a couple years ago. But listen to what he said about this young couple, Harry and Meghan, clip 7.
Mr. President, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle chimed in on the U.S. election and essentially encouraged people to vote for Joe Biden. I wanted to get your reaction to that.
I'm not a fan of hers. And I would say this, and she probably has heard that, but I wish a lot of luck to Harry, because he's going to need it.
He's going to need it. There's President Trump. Spot on. He was absolutely right. He was absolutely right. I wish him some luck because, boy, he's going to need it with that particular woman. He's going to need it. Going back to 2017, my father said, look at the fruits. Look at the fruits of that relationship. Watch the headlines. Look at what's happening to that family. Speaking of the royal family in Britain, is it any wonder? Is it any wonder we're seeing such major problems? Shouldn't be a surprise. In the New Throne of David book, my father says, when God gave the revelation about the new stone on January 16th, 2017, the royal family of Britain was displaced as the royal family of David's throne. It says that was a signal of terrible things to come upon Britain, as well as a sharp decline of America and Judah. See, it's a bad sign for all of us, for all of our nations, the United States, Britain, little Judah in the Middle East. Like you see on the most recent trumpet, there's no help. Well, the positive side to this, actually the positive in this, is the message contained in that book I just quoted to you from, The New Throne of David. Soon the whole world, not just the United States and Britain, but soon the whole world's going to rally around God's throne, God's family, God's coming kingdom. It's to be established on this earth. My father gave a program, a Key of David program, on the new throne of David back in June of 2018. Here's a clip from that, clip 9.
This throne, this new throne, and David's throne always has unified people. It unifies this church. It unifies, or is going to unify, the entire world. It's going to unify everybody. There is a new throne that's prophesied to be on this earth in the latter days, and that is the time that we're living in right now. And it's a monumental hope for this world, no matter what happens as far as man is ruling over man. There is the best news you could possibly hear, and of course it's called the gospel. But this truth can galvanize your life and fill you with joy and hope as nothing else can. And I'm not just saying that, this is not a fantasy. You can do that, and it will work in your life.
You can do it. The individual, you can do this. It will work. It will galvanize your life. And we need it. We need, as I've been discussing in recent programs, we need to rally around God's family. We need unity in the body of Christ. Because look at this world and look at our nations. Look at this so-called COVID relief bill. $1.9 trillion. And only about 9% of it's going directly toward the Wuhan flu and everything that happened because of it. All the lockdowns, the vaccines, everything, and the relief for ordinary Americans. If it's going to take, I think it's $13,400 per taxpayer just to pay for this bill. I mean, somebody's got to pay for it, right? Nothing's for free. So if it takes $13,400 per taxpayer to pay for it, why not just cut a check for $13,400 for each taxpayer? Well, they talk about the $1,000 here or the $1,400 here or the relief you'll get with this or that. In fact, this goes to a lot of left-wing causes. You heard Megan talk about the unions. How many unions are going to get all of these blue states that locked everyone down, that destroyed so many businesses? And then here comes the relief to those states who just ran their states into the ground. And the government, they're there to print off more money. 20% of the dollars in circulation, all over the world, I mean, they were printed last year. In 2020. Here comes this COVID relief bill. And I mean, these are senators and congresspeople. They're just getting warmed up. This is just the beginning. They're talking about a $3 trillion package. Well, if you can just print money, as if this is just going to go on and on and on, and as if the costs at the grocery store or at the gas station are just going to stay level, surely they're not going to go up. There's not going to be out of control inflation as a result of this. What has happened, even in modern history, when other nations did this? What about the Weimar Republic? What about Zimbabwe? What about Venezuela? No, the lessons, they're there, but they're certainly not being learned or heeded. It's just mass scale printing of dollars. And then sending the money to all of these left-wing items on the agenda. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says Congress is still working on its $1.9 trillion spending bill, and Democrats are already floating a sequel. There's more where this came from. It says our number one lodestar is going to be helping the American people, and if they need more help, we'll do another bill, said Chuck Schumer. They're not helping America. They're hurting America. They're hurting America. It says only a small part of what Democrats passed is for pandemic or economic relief. It's mainly a way station on their high-speed train to a cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. That's what they're building. A cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. There's no incentive in this bill for Americans coming, for ordinary Americans. The reaction from this bill and they're all Democrats, but there's nothing there that encourages America to get back to work. It's just the opposite, in fact. The Wall Street Journal explained here that, you know, Joe Manchin, he's the big power broker now because he's a Democrat that occasionally leans with the Republicans because he comes from West Virginia. So they come out with this bill and they say, look, we want to give jobless benefits to ordinary Americans. We want to continue. It's similar, very similar to what they're doing in the UK. Just let's just keep giving them welfare checks. And even Joe Manchin said, if you give that much money, West Virginians are not going to go back to work. So you've got to at least provide some incentive, some encouragement to West Virginians and ordinary Americans. Look, the lockdown's coming to an end, and ultimately, here's a little bit of relief, but we want to get you back to work. They don't want that. They want you dependent on the U.S. government, and the government, they're happy to print off trillions and trillions of dollars. This is just step one. There's a sequel, and then another one after that. It says here, most of the $1.9 trillion will flow to government unions or supposedly temporary income transfers that Democrats intend to make permanent later this year. How about that? Most of it goes to government unions. In other words, they're paying off the cronies. They're paying off the swamp. I mean, you live pretty good if you live in the swamp. If you work in the swamp, you've got it made. Because they certainly pay and feed their own, that's for sure. Occasionally, they'll turn on one another. We've seen that with Andrew Cuomo. But for the most part, if you're there, I mean, if you're Republican and Democrat, both sides, really. As I said, there was massive amounts of spending going on last year. But the figures, someone, I read an article recently that just compared this to the bailout package from 2009 when we nearly had an economic collapse. And how it's just making what happened in 2009, just a little over 10 years ago, seem like chump change, really. Now, $1.9 trillion, they're not even done spending all the relief that they legislated for last year. Now here comes $1.9 trillion. And then they're talking about a sequel, as you heard from Chuck Schumer. So they successfully used the Wuhan flu and all the lockdowns that came along with it. They used that to steal the election, changing all the rules, making it election month instead of election day. Harvesting all of those ballots, dumping off all of those ballots, those pristine, hardly wrinkled at all, stacks and stacks of them in Detroit, in Atlanta, in Philadelphia, in Milwaukee. Loaded up on trucks in the middle of the night. They came in just at the last moment to tip the scales over for Joe Biden. So they use the China flu to rig the election, and now they're using the pandemic to, as the Wall Street Journal brings out, to turn the United States, to transform the United States to a cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. This is just one of many programs, going back to the election steal, as I said at the start. All of those rules that they changed last year, now they want to establish that as the new normal. They want to legalize the cheating. And so out comes the fake president's executive action from the weekend. And then H.R. 1, I'm sure the Democrats, they're hoping that follows soon. Here's John Ratcliffe on television over the weekend talking about this H.R. 1 legislation and how that it's an effort, an attempt to legalize cheating. Clip 8.
Well, Maria, I came on your show after the election in November and talked about how it was unfortunate that politicians had used the pandemic to create rules that were ripe for fraud, that bipartisan commissions had said shouldn't be part of our election system because they would bring into question the integrity of every election. And now what you see with H.R. 1 and with President Biden's executive order is they're making those pandemic voting rules permanent. No voter verification at all. Voting day, election day turns into election month. And the worst part of it, ballot harvesting, where any person can go door to door and collect ballots and be trusted, even if they're political activists, to turn those in to be counted accurately. Essentially, Maria, I think H.R. 1 legalizes cheating.
That's John Ratcliffe yesterday saying that their aim here is to legalize cheating. And if you don't go along with them, as I said at the top, you're a racist. This is the very first few lines of Joe Biden's executive order. It says, on this day in 1965, state troopers beat and tear gassed hundreds of peaceful protesters crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. The protesters were seeking justice and to ensure their right to vote would not be denied. So if you just try to abide by the rules, if you just demand a free and fair election, in fact, you're a racist and you're denying people the right to vote. That's what he's getting at here. And you hear John Ratcliffe, who's absolutely right, saying this effort, H.R. 1, would legalize the cheating. It would make it permanent. I mean, this goes right together with the effort to turn the United States into a cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. And then as long as Democrats just keep getting voted in, they'll just keep printing off the money and we'll live in this socialist utopia. How much longer is this going to last? How much longer is God going to let it go on? America, as my father said, America has no helper. He said this, my father did. I'm not sure even I understand this like I should, but 2 Kings 14, 26 and 27 point to that reality. This passage gives you an idea of the depth of the corruption in Washington. America's affliction is very bitter. It's very bitter. And the nation has no helper. How could radicals keep all their corruption quiet? Why did some Republicans let them? He's talking here about the fake Russia collusion hoax and the Mueller investigation and all of that. He says, well, they all live by an understanding there is in the swamp. As Washington's political class is often called, it says the understanding is this. If you don't go along with the way things are done, the established powers will make sure you lose everything. You just go along. And if you don't, we'll blot you out. We'll censor you. We'll delete you. We'll threaten you. We'll make sure you lose everything. Only God can save America, Britain, Judah, temporarily. We know it's not going to be forever because we're in this predicament we're in because of our many sins. That's the point that my father made with respect to the British royal family. If you go back and look at his writings in 2017, and then even with what happened in 2016 to 2020 with the Trump administration, still look at where we are today. Have we really confronted the root cause of these many problems? Well, go back and look at that article. America has no helper. That's in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Bit of a truth bomb from Candace Owens, the black commentator. She says Meghan Markle is less than 25% black. Her son is less than 12% black. Her and Harry implying that everything that happened to them is because of her blackness is a sickening level of scapegoating. What Harry is doing to his family, who cannot respond, is unforgivable. What that young man is doing to his family, and of course, like she says, they're not going to respond. They're going to keep it mum, okay? They're going to keep it in-house. Unforgivable. What a shame. Breakdown of family. Have you heard about that before on this program? Well, we've had a family-building experience over this past weekend with the student body at Armstrong College and faculty enjoying lots of activities together out at the fire or singing, performing skits, playing sports. We've had work parties. We've got another work party this morning, which is, again, we're making the camp out as productive as we can as well. But we've spent a lot of time together, and as I emphasized on the program Friday, I was encouraging the students coming in to really think about how to enrich their conversation and fellowship with more godliness, with more of God's character. I gave you that quote from the James booklet, where my father says that we need to learn how to say things that will encourage people and uplift people. When we fail to do that, he wrote, we can easily beat people down. It's easy to beat people down with words. God wants us to really uplift and encourage with our language. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. It's like James 3 says, it's a powerful member. It can be used for as a force for good. It can be used as a force for evil. And you've got plenty of examples of both in history, secular history, certainly in the Bible as well. James 3, I'll just continue reading from this chapter. We started this on Friday. But it says in verse 6, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire of hell, it says, for every kind of beasts and of birds and of serpents and things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. That's James 3 in verse 8. It's the most difficult member of the body to keep under control. The book of Proverbs, I think, lays that out pretty clearly. Verse 9, I'll read in the Moffat. It says, with the tongue we bless the eternal and Father, and with the tongue we curse men made in God's own likeness. Blessing and cursing stream out of the same lips. My brothers, this ought not to be. You don't want to say one thing and then say another and be a hypocrite. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, as I read last week, Matthew 12:34. We can deceive ourselves into thinking that we're pretty righteous when we say a few nice words here and there. But God sees and hears what we're saying all the time. How we're treating one another, how we're treating our spouses, how we're interacting with our children, how we're using the gift of language to serve him or not in some cases. Verse 11, it says, does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? so can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. It says, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. See, it's either one way of speech or the other. The two cannot be mixed together if you're made in the image of God. Evil and good, I mean. We can't be double-tongued. It says in the James booklet, we're ambassadors for Christ. We speak for him. Do you talk like God? Do you talk like the Bible? Is your speech grounded in God's word? It says God demands that we speak the truth. This world's about to be filled with tongues that speak like God. Any other language will be destroyed with the people who speak it. What a difference. You see the way that language is used today. All the lies and the deceit, and we expose so much of that on this program. But as I've said before, smooth-sounding words, Isaiah 30 talks about that. Obviously, Satan the devil's referred to as an angel of light in 2 Corinthians 11. Satan certainly knows how to sound righteous. There's a show of righteousness, like it says in 2 Timothy 3, but that's just it. It's all a show. It's a great performance. It's an Emmy award-winning performance. But what are the fruits? What are the actions? This is from an article in 1962 in the Good News magazine. It says, the very reason that you should want to be with brethren, that's brethren in God's church or God's family, instead of the world, is that you can discuss the Bible and spiritual topics. If you cannot talk about the Bible with each other, then you are no different from the world. The one thing that makes the people around you worldly is that they have nothing else to talk about except material things and other people. The one thing that ought to make your conversation different from the world is that you can talk about God and His Word. That's what makes it so wonderful in God's family, in God's church, at God's campout, is that we can talk about things that you just can't talk about with others in the world because their minds are filled with material interests. It says the society around us became worldly when it refused to retain God in its knowledge. That's talked about in Romans 1. And again, this article is not saying that you can't have interaction with people when you go to drop your car off at the shop or interact with people at work or in the grocery store. But there's just because their minds are blinded to the truth. 2 Corinthians 4, they've been blinded to the true gospel. There's just only so much you can even talk about. And in fact, if you bring up the subject of God and the Bible, so many, many people are hostile to that, like Romans 8, 7 says. They don't want God as part of the conversation, certainly not part of the solution. But how different it is when you're in the church, when you're with God's family, and you can freely talk about the things of God. You can talk about God's purpose and plan. This article says here, how many people of this world really talk about God and the Bible and understand the plan of God? It says, finally, are some of us becoming so material-minded, so worldly, that we no longer find the Bible interesting, inspiring? The one book we most enjoy reading and talking about? It says, if you cannot talk about the Bible with brethren during weekly social occasions, then you'd better stay home, pray, and read the Bible by yourself. You better stay back and fill up on God's Word first. If you can't talk like this with God's family, if you're too shallow, see, you look at Malachi 3 and verse 16, that says that Philadelphians, they speak often one to another. And they're not just talking about trivial things. They're excited about God's purpose and plan. They can't get enough of it. They want to associate with God's people so that they can open up about it. This same article says here, the time to visit brethren as a social occasion is during the week. Well, it's just talking here more about Sabbath conversation and how that during a Sabbath service, that's really when we need to raise the level, the standard of our conversation and fellowship to really bring God and his purpose and plan into the dialogue. We're heading into Passover here in just a few weeks. Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And, of course, so many of us are actively working to de-leaven the house, the car, and that sort of thing. There's lots of lessons that we're reminded of each year when we do these things. Lots and lots of things for us to talk about with one another. This talks about, this is another article from 1966, about what students were learning at Ambassador College, the true values that they learned there. It says here, they learn the real purpose of human life. Life takes on true meaning. Emphasis is on character building. Students learn not merely how to earn a living, but how to live. Students acquire a well-rounded, broadening, balanced education. This is not only mind development, but also that of personality, true culture, poise, and emotional maturity. See, as I told the students last week, if you're growing in these things, if you're building that personality, you know, the focus with the Laodiceans and even Ambassador College after Mr. Armstrong died, they shifted and went over to, just like the universities of this world, just teach them how to earn a living. That's the main thing. They went in that direction, and Ambassador lost its uniqueness. And what happened to Ambassador? Well, it went under. It didn't survive. What makes God's College special and unique is the fact that these young people, they can come in and they can learn a lot of practical skills. You think about some of the things that they're learning in the work-study program. There's a lot that they can take straight into their careers with. But overall, above all, most importantly, they come to God's College and they learn how to live, how to build a marriage, a happy marriage and family, how to be a law-abiding, supportive, tax-paying citizen of your community, how to lead a productive life in service to God. And yes, there's a lot of focus at God's College on speech. Speech training, conversation, fellowship, dating widely, dating a lot of different people so that you can get to know others and develop your personality along the way. It's a beautiful program. James 4 and verse 11, it says, Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. Don't speak evil of one another. Love each other. Support each other. Encourage each other. My father writes in the booklet, again, James returns to the theme of controlling our tongues. This epistle says more about this subject than any book in the Bible. Watch what you say, he says, because what you say is what you are. If we are not careful, we can flagrantly break God's law just by our words. God wants his people to obey his law in the spirit and in detail, it says. If you love people, that shows that you love God's law. It says if you speak evil of God's family, you're speaking evil of God's law. That's some instruction from the James booklet. As my father says, there's more on the subject of speech and controlling the tongue in James than any other book. You put it together with some of the Proverbs, and there's a lot of instruction that God wants for us to take to heart and to bring into our conversation and fellowship. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, we'll get to some of those emails eventually. You can email us, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.